Okay, and welcome back to another module on Office 365 development. I'm here with Scott Hillier, so thanks back, Scott.
Yeah, good to be here.
So today we're going to be covering off another area of Office 365 development. So if I just skip into the course agenda here, we've already talked about getting started with apps for SharePoint, and now we're going to really deep dive on to the getting started with apps for Office, which is another area of the app model, but more specifically around the Office client itself, rather than SharePoint, more of a product server inside the Office 365 space. So with that, let's just jump in and I'll just explain exactly what we're going to be covering today. We're going to start by introducing you to the app model from an Office perspective. We've already done that from a SharePoint perspective. And then we're going to explain in detail about how the apps for Office model actually works and demo some of the examples there to really show the compelling features that you guys can leverage as a web developer when you're actually doing this in real life in your own business applications, and hopefully get you to understand exactly what kind of conceptual areas you can build into when you're thinking about building your solutions for your business users. And then we're going to talk a bit more about how you can get started with the apps for Office model within your own development environment. So that's kind of the agenda for today. So with that, we'll jump straight in. And again, you'll be seeing this slide a lot where we're talking a little bit around kind of the overall development platform. And ideally what we're thinking about here is that the app model is really about that contextual experience that you have when you're building business solutions into our user interface. When you want to surface up things like your expense reporting directly into Outlook or maybe directly into Excel, where your business users probably live day in and day out. And then secondly, with the Office 365 APIs, this is really where we see you owning the user interface, whether it be on a standalone web application or maybe a mobile application like Windows 8 or Android or iOS, where you'll be calling into the Office 365 APIs to leverage some of their services like the document management service or maybe the Exchange Mail or Calendar or People services, or maybe some of the extended SharePoint services like Search or the social aspects of the Office 365 platform. And then lastly, you know, just to recap, we really see this benefit of using Visual Studio and leveraging the whole Azure platform for running a lot of this provider-hosted technology that we're going to be talking around today. But also not to forget that this is just a normal HTML5 web stack, where you'll be able to develop directly onto existing technologies that you're comfortable with, such as Ruby or PHP, to run any of your apps for Office or apps for SharePoint. So it's a good point to remember really, Scott, is that, you know, in the past we've had to learn different technology sets now, but now we can think about building and learning the app model once, but being able to target multiple areas.
Yeah, sure. I mean, when we used to have to do these types of solutions in the past, we always had this very intimate relationship with the product, whether that product was SharePoint or Office. So I used to build Visual Studio tools for Office, Visto apps for Office clients, and in there you used to have, you know, the code was very intimate with the product. So again, getting away from that intimacy with the product, being able to have something that's decoupled, to use standard web development techniques, those are the real advantages here.
Yeah, great. And so, you know, from an intro to the app model and Office aspect, with the contextual apps, it's really about, as we've mentioned before, servicing anything you want to build inside our UI into an area that they're familiar with as a business user. The key here is that it allows them to be productive where they're working day in, day out. I've mentioned in the past that, you know, I'm living inside Mail. I'm always kind of checking my email and collaborating with my peers inside email. So being able to have those panes on the right-hand side that give me context of the email I'm dealing with, and we'll show some demos later on of how useful that can be, is a very compelling thing to be able to show business users, especially if they're used to, at the minute, a very disjointed process where they might click and launch something in email that jumps over to another web application where they have to kind of interact with it, and then they have to remember to switch back to where they were working prior. So having one user interface where they can keep that context and interact in one place is extremely compelling as users.
You know, I used to joke that a lot of end users really just function as middleware. So what they do is they go over to one system and they, you know, they open up a line of business system, copy stuff out of there, and then they come over to an Office document and paste it back in. So you have a lot of that going on, perhaps even going on in your organization. And so the idea that somebody could stay in an Office client and continue to work is very powerful. So an example that that I'd give you that was something that I'd done a few years ago is we had salespeople who had to create proposals. So in order to create those proposals, they needed customer information, you know, their address, name, contact info, that type of thing. And they would open up the CRM system in a browser, locate the customer, copy the information out, and then paste it into Word. So it'd be much better if they could just surface that customer information in a task pane in Word and then just simply click on it and have it automatically get inserted into the right template. So that's the type of productivity that this is really offering to us and saves a tremendous amount of time logging into different systems and functioning as middleware for those systems.
Right, and as you see as we go through some of these demos, it's very, very easy to get that integration between your application that's sitting in that pane within one of those Office clients and the actual Office client UI itself. And one last thing on this from a context perspective is that you're not just targeting Outlook for desktop, whether it be the 32-bit client or 64-bit client. You're actually targeting the Office from the online perspective, whether it's OO as we know it, Outlook Online, or like whether it's actually on the app. So if you've got an iPad with Word, PowerPoint, Excel on it, or maybe you've seen the new modern Office that we showed in the keynote at the Build conference in this year in 2014, you know, over time we'll be adding those app services into there. So you'll be able to learn this model once, but target Office wherever your user's using it on whatever type of platform and whatever surface they choose to use, whether it's in a browser or whether it's in a rich client or app they're running on their takeaway tablets.
And what organization isn't dealing with different devices right now?
Right. And then I guess this web platform allows you to kind of have that flexibility that you don't have to think about writing in Objective-C necessarily to target iOS. You can build in the web platform and it just surfaces up.
Or writing it multiple times to target different devices so you have all these different channels that you're working with instead of just writing it once, starting with the idea that it's going to be on multiple devices and moving from there.
Absolutely. So we definitely see the power in this being a flexible way of writing once but targeting many platforms. And just on that note, just to highlight something else that's very exciting from an Office 365 perspective, if I jump over to my web browser very quickly, if you just go to office.com roadmap, if I can spell roadmap correctly, this is a new roadmap that we've launched, which actually shows you features that have been launched in the service, but also features that are currently rolling out, but also things that are actually in development now by engineering team. Hopefully we don't have to cancel too many, but we've left it there as a caveat. But so we've got some things in development right now. And if I just open this up, what you'll notice here is that right now, when you build an app for Excel, which you can do as a content area, and we'll talk about shapes later on, right now it only works within the Excel on the desktop. But as you can see here in the roadmap that's currently in development, which means it will be in the service within the next few months, we'll actually be able to add apps for Office that used to just work in the desktop client in the Excel aspect. And you'll see over time we'll be adding more and more of these to the roadmap as we finish off that matrix of where we can light up apps, whether it's in the desktop client, whether it's in online, or whether it's in those modern applications as well. So this roadmap's become very useful to kind of see where we're thinking and where we're going with this in the future. Okay, and then so from an introducing of the app model, just to recap this, and we talked about this from a SharePoint perspective, where you know the code that you wrote in SharePoint or in Office with a traditional VSTO or VBA model, a lot of that code was executed directly in the Office client. So what kind of things did developers find tough when it came to developing like that in that kind of model?
Right, so for a long time, I've really been an advocate of developing inside of Office. And I worked with Visual Studio Tools for Office, as I said before, so Visto type applications. And I found that there were a couple of things that really kept people from adopting the approach of building productivity tools into the actual product. One is just the very nature of the way they were created, sort of intimately, as I'd said before, in with the product. So when you created a Visto app, that code really ran very intimately inside the product. It had to be downloaded onto the client machine. So two challenges there. One, if you had a client image that was locked down, then the idea of pulling down a Visto package onto the client machine might be something that you had difficulty getting through centralized IT. And the second is that we typically find that a lot of organizations aren't deploying the latest version of Office right away, right? So I found myself in many situations where maybe the latest version of Office wasn't available, so you didn't always have all the greatest development techniques in front of you because they were a little bit behind. So I'm really excited about the idea of being able to do these apps in Office that's available online, because now you're going to have a much better situation where people are getting the latest version and they can use the latest techniques. So I think the things that were acting as roadblocks to extending the Office family before have largely been removed by this model, and that's pretty exciting.
Right, and so from an Office apps perspective, you know, they no longer have to be coding and live inside that Office client. But the other adjustment to that is that, you know, you don't necessarily have to run that code directly in the cloud, or you can actually run this on premises as well. So if you've got certain apps that you want to run like that, we can actually target that too. So we have that flexibility. It doesn't necessarily have to be in Azure. It could be just run as a URL directly targeted to your on-premises environment.
Sure, but in both cases, not intimately within the product itself, but separate from it, and that's the key. Whether you're on-premises or in the cloud, you're not actually running inside the Office client the way that you had to in the past.
Right. And then from an apps perspective, much like with the SharePoint side of the house, where you deployed that app and SharePoint granted you an OAuth token, essentially with apps for Office, and we'll see this in a demonstration, when the tenant admins or maybe even the business users, if they have the rights, can add those apps, it's granting that permission to then to allow that to be lit up for all of the tenants or a selection of people within that OAuth and Outlook experience, for instance, to be able to experience those apps in their own kind of day-to-day lives as they're using those products, which is, you know, it's a nice granular, powerful way of deploying those apps that maybe you couldn't have done in the past with maybe a VSTO app. Because, I mean, how would you have done deployment with a VSTO app in a previous life?
Well, typically what happened when you had to install a Visto package is, you know, probably the smoothest way to do it was what's called a click-once package, where you would actually put it up on the server. So that experience could be pretty smooth. You can click on something and get it pulled down. But again, the challenge is really around governance. So did you want to put a package up on the server that would actually install onto the client? So I found some challenges there just around governance and rules maybe that centralized IT had. So there were nice mechanisms for doing that in the past. I think it was a good model that we had in the time that we had it. But again, I think the weaknesses of that model have been largely overcome by the new one.
Yeah. And one other area we, you know, I'd really like to highlight is that, you know, by building this once, this learning this app model once and learning this way of developing with a web platform, we have the ability to kind of build whether it's SharePoint or whether it's an Office app in one skill set. But the nice thing is when you think about this is as you're building out your business solutions, you're not probably just going to build an app for SharePoint. You're probably going to build an app for SharePoint and maybe you'll have a Surface element within your Outlook client because as an overall business solution, it makes sense. For instance, the expense calculator, it might be an email that triggers an expense that you'd have an Outlook add-in, an Outlook app already deployed into your environment that will then trigger that. And then from there, we might actually submit that receipt, that's attachment in that email directly into SharePoint. And then there might be an app for SharePoint that then manipulates that receipt in some way to then kick off maybe a workflow that's deployed as part of that app for SharePoint and kicks off the rest of the process. So don't think about these things as kind of a separate layer. Really think about this as more of one overall business solution where you build maybe multiple apps for Office that target different products within the Office client realm, as well as the app for SharePoint as well. And then the other aspect of the slide is that, you know, you think about the services you can leverage, whether it be inside SharePoint or Office 365, or even further afield into Azure Web Services. You can also consume other web services that are off of the Microsoft stack as well, which is what, you know, web developers have been doing for a long time now. So this really empowers you to kind of reach further afield outside of the Microsoft stack.
Yeah, it makes total sense because, you know, rarely does an end user need all the power of an application all at once. So breaking it up into pieces that fit better into Office clients and into SharePoint makes a lot more sense because now it's contextual in how I'm using it. I'm not overwhelmed with all the possible ways, all the UI elements there, and it's much easier for me to learn and be productive with it.
Right. And so what I wanted to do now was show a demonstration of kind of how a business user would add their first app. So I'm just going to jump over, and there's two ways we can do this. I'm logged into OWA, Outlook Online here. And if I go over to the settings on the right-hand side, you'll see we have a various amount of options. And one of those options is actually Manage Apps. So if I come in and click on Manage Apps here, because I'm the tenant administrator here, it's actually going to show me all of the apps that have been deployed into the Office 365 tenant where people have connected to their Outlook, whether it be through Outlook on the desktop or Outlook online, or in the future where we support other Outlook clients on different platforms. So you can see here we've got a variety of different apps that I've got in my own personal area. And as an administrator, I can actually go and find even more apps from the store, or I could come in here and actually add an app via a URL or via a file. And we'll talk a little bit more about the URL and from a file later on. But for the purpose of this demo, I just wanted to demonstrate adding one from the store. So you'll see it jumps over to the Office Store. Again, we saw this when we did the apps for SharePoint demo. And I can actually drill down and filter by particular different products within the Office client. So you can see here, the usual suspects, DocuSign, Harmony, and LinkedIn are there. I'm going to pick the LinkedIn app here. So I'm just going to click on Add on the right here. And then again, I can see some screenshots of exactly what this LinkedIn app's going to do for me. And I'm just going to click Add here. And what that's going to do is it's going to add into my Office kind of catalog there, where then anyone that is using Outlook Online or is connecting to a mailbox within this tenant using Outlook Desktop is going to be able to connect. And you can see here that this app, much like the SharePoint apps, have permissions. So
asking for consent, right?
Right. And so what would be the purpose of this, Scott? What would this enable you to do?
Well, the key thing here is that in all cases where you're building these apps that run inside of Office or inside of SharePoint or indeed just the internet in general, what we're concerned with trying to do, one of the big things that this model opens up is that the app itself has permissions to do things. And so what you need is a consent step that you go through that grants, authorizes the app to do things that it needs to do in order to perform a function for you. And key in all this model is you're really not in a position where you have to give your credentials to the app. You're just giving it authorization to do what it needs to do, and it can do it on your behalf without ever having to know your credentials, and then allow that in the cases we're seeing here to even be centrally managed. So it's a big win for adding that additional functionality to your Office clients.
Right, and if we look here now, you can see while you were talking that it's actually added that app now directly into my environment. So if I refresh this page now, you'll actually see that that's installed that app. So if you had an issue where you found out later on after the fact that maybe that app was doing something it shouldn't have been doing, we could actually just remove this app from here and it would take away that ability for the end users to be able to do that within their own Outlook client. Now, some organizations are going to allow their end users to add apps without going through this process, but most large enterprise organizations are going to want this level of control of what's going in their environment and who can actually see it.
Sure, makes sense.
And then if I just jump into my Outlook interface now, when we open up the web app now, the experience of that LinkedIn app, there's a few shapes which we'll talk about in a moment. But when I click on an email that's come from Jeremy, it's come from another email, is on the bottom here, we'll actually see that all of my content apps are coming through down the bottom here. And you'll see now that we have this LinkedIn element. When I click on that, it's told me that contacts have been found. So it's found me because I was in a two, and it's found me again because I have a doppelganger working at Microsoft that's sending me emails. And you'll see here
it's
listed them up. Ooh. And it's great for demos. And then essentially here, you'll see that it's listed those two. Now, unfortunately, it appears that my photos have been taken down from the interweb, so I'm not quite sure why they weren't LinkedIn safe.
Well, it has to be something.
But you can see here that it's asking for me my location and stuff, so it's probably a browser setting I've got tweaked to block those things. And it is a demo. But if I click through here, I'm hoping...
There you go.
It's asking me, is this Jeremy? And I can go, well, yep, that is me. And I want to confirm that. And so now if I kind of click back and click in, you'll now see that in that tab, I'm getting my LinkedIn information. So it's really useful to be able to go through and tag these individuals And then as I'm going through my email, maybe I've got a thread with a few hundred people on it. I'm able to click in here and see them all and get a bit more information about this guy and see what kind of recent activity he's been after. I don't even click that. God only knows what activity I've been up to recently. but yeah, it just gives the idea of you've got that in context. I've not had to leave Outlook online to do that. Right. And much the same if I was in my Outlook desktop client, I'd get exactly the same experience there as well.
I tell you, I think if you said to the average business user, I can make it so that you can spend your entire day in Outlook and you never have to leave.
Yep.
I think most of them would jump on that. They would love that. Outlook is really a place where a lot of people want to be. They spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, and I must admit, I've been forcing myself a bit to be more comfortable with the browser version, Outlook Online and Word Online, just to get a bit of a feel for how that experience works. And this is great. I actually find myself just jumping into the browser now most of the time rather than the desktop.
Yeah,
so it's interesting to see how people kind of adjust to that, especially because this online version works across multiple different platforms.
Well,
and tablets.
And that's the issue, right? Yeah. I find that's true for me primarily because of the multiple devices.
Right.
So, you know, it's great if I'm at my desktop and I want to use the FAQ client, but a lot of times I'll be on my tablet or my phone and, you know, I need a different experience. So it just drives you more and more to use that web-based experience. And the more productive you can be in that web-based experience, the better.
Right. And just another example we've got here is the action items. If you click on that one, what it's actually done is it scanned my entire email and it thinks it's found an action. In this email, I essentially wrote, so when are you catching up this Friday? And it's actually come up with, this is an action that I can click follow, and it'll actually go and create me a task in my task pane as well.
Yeah, I love that capability of the app to scan your mail body looking for key things that it thinks it might want to do something with.
Right. Yeah, so again, extremely useful and a good scenario there of how we can use apps for Office to, you know, get into that interface where business users sit every day with some really compelling things that people will typically do day in, day out, like the LinkedIn checked or try and find the actions within an email thread that someone's been flicking around the organization and try and work out whether those actions are for you or not. So hopefully that's given you a good idea about the introduction there. And now just to jump a bit deeper into, you know, the different areas of Office. When we think about Office development, we're really thinking about how we target across all those different services of where Office client can live. And having that rich experience that like you just saw when we did that demo of LinkedIn. Now, typically when we think about the pre-Office 2013 way, we've really focused on VSTO and we finished on com add-ins and maybe some tweaks to the ribbon and some macros there.
Sure.
And that's definitely, you know, has been a good reason why Office has been so successful. With Office 2013 and further, it's worth noting that we do actually still support those ways of building those add-ins or those extensions to the Office client. But in the future, the way that we're focusing now is that we're improving and we're maturing how the app for Office and the app for SharePoint world works. So there won't be any new updates in the traditional approaches that we did in prior to 2013. All of our engineering focus is very much on the app model. And it's really a lot to do with the fact of the flexibility of the web platform there, the reach across the whole Office client stack. And so that's where you're going to see all the improvements. That's where you're going to see us jumping in the roadmap there and seeing those enhancements as we go forward. So just worth bearing in mind that your old code that you built on those previous approaches will still be supported in this major version. And also we've promised in the next major version of Office Client. But remember, that's only the desktop client. If you build a VSTO add-in or a COM add-in, those aren't going to work if you're trying to target the iPad version of Word or PowerPoint or target Word Online or Outlook Online, which is our intention as we add those surface layers into the app model. So again, there's a compelling benefit there, along with the fact that you don't have to build inside our languages. You could be building a full HTML JavaScript stack.
Yeah, sure. Just like you can with SharePoint apps, with the apps for Office, you have that same kind of flexibility to use lots of different web-based technologies to pull this off. So that's a great reason to move beyond, if you're using a Visto add-in right now, to move beyond and think about this new model.
Yeah, and just to reiterate that with this slide, you know, we've really focused on those approaches. And then with the desktop apps, we're really kind of targeting at the moment the task, the content, and the mail app, which we'll talk about the shapes in a moment.
Yep.
And then with the online, with the web apps right now, those are the ones we've focused on inside Excel and Outlook. But as I say, if you keep an idea, keep focused on the roadmap, you'll see that this is going to grow over time and we'll have a very strong, compelling story across all of those Office products as we move forward. So with that in mind, the scenarios that we see with Office 2013 from a development aspect is really, we want to leverage all the little hooks and bells and whistles that we find within all of those different Office clients, whether it be the data visualizations or maybe it's we want to build out documents by using injecting code into existing documents, or maybe injecting content into an existing mail, or the other way around, like we did with the action items. We read the email and we made some assumptions in our app and found maybe a potential action for an individual. Those are the typical scenarios we see. So it's not just about servicing that UI within the Office clients. It's really about that contextual experience of, I know what's happening in the underlying UI, and then understanding how I can interact with that in some way. And you'll see, you know, we've already done the LinkedIn demo where it picked up on the people in the email thread, but you'll see in some of the other demos we showed today that there are other really powerful ways that you can get that context and then allow those business users to make that business sense there when they're making their decisions living within that one client that they're in all day, essentially.
Yeah, well, and even repurposing your own data. So taking, you know, a lot of what users do is they take data out of line of business systems and then repurpose it to make Office documents. So that is exactly where this is going to help out significantly, allowing you to connect to your own data sources and repurpose that information to build out Word documents, to build out spreadsheets, to build out PowerPoint decks, what have you.
Right. And the nice part about with the app model is that we can actually package those things inside the Office document templates. So I can bundle multiple apps for Office inside a document template, or in some cases, if I've added the app myself, and then I send that document on to another individual with that app embedded in, it's actually going to be opened by that individual and the app will actually launch as well. So it's a kind of a seamless process of me passing around those documents, but taking those apps as almost part of the content of the document as you move forward. And then lastly, the additional step that you can do with these document templates is I can actually roll these up into an app for SharePoint and maybe deploy that as an app for SharePoint with a document library, with an attached content type, with a document type, which is that document template. So when a user spins up a new project within SharePoint and goes new from the document library, that new document might be that template with a bunch of those apps lit up already.
Yeah, sure. What a great scenario that is, combining the power of that app for Office with the power of SharePoint together and just delivering that as one package to the end user. I mean, that really basically puts you in a position where you can use the entire stack to get your work done.
Right, and I think where we've come from, either being a SharePoint developer, which was most definitely me for the last kind of, since at least 2006, whereas now I'm really kind of seeing myself as more of an Office 365 developer where I'm building both SharePoint apps and Office apps. But the key here is that you're learning one app model. So maybe if you've come from the I'm an Office developer world, relearning this app model now means you're also a SharePoint developer. So you get a lot more span or bang for your buck, I guess, in learning this new language.
Sure, and not just the different data stores that you can have access to, but also getting them to work together in ways that were difficult before, right? So now that you can get to mail, that you can get to calendar, contacts, as well as lists and libraries, being able to pull those things together really opens up the ability to create apps that were difficult or impossible to do before.
Right. And so with that, the other strong area of this is the documentation on the API. So if you go to aka.ms/WAC/Office.js APIs. If I just jump over this there now to the live page, in this example or inside this documentation here, we reference all the various different objects, but we also have a nice way of navigating through this. So, for instance, I can explore the API either by the shapes, which we'll talk about in a moment, or by the by the products as well. So for instance, if I went into Word, for instance, and used the ZoomIt technology, that's actually going to jump into the reference documentation, and I'll immediately see a nice like linked class library almost of the API here. And if I zoom in, because I am a little bit blind, so I'm going to have to come in, maybe not that far, not quite that blind yet. Give me another 10 years, I might need to be at that file level. And what you'll see here is that I get a nice kind of example of about what objects I can use and in what products I can use them. And so it gives me a nice kind of overview of how rich this Office JS API is already.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's very useful. But also, as well as that, I can kind of drive in here. So if I went and found that file object on the left-hand side, I can actually come in here and start exploring that file object to understand how, by pulling files from various areas of the Office client as I'm interacting with it. So please check out the API. It's definitely a good place to start when you're building your apps for Office. And then, so I guess the next thing to tackle really is how do we get these things in this environment? In the first demo, we showed how you could either add it from the store directly, or via a URL or via a file. Now, in essence, all three of those is pointing to this one manifest file. Mm-hmm. So what makes up that? What's that manifest file actually doing under the covers?
Well, all these things need some sort of container that says, you know, certain things about what the title and version of the product is, as well as how to launch it, instructions on how to launch it, and what privileges it gets. So
yeah,
that's a key part in communicating with the platform about what it is that you want to do and what kind of permissions you need.
Right, and so this app manifest is very similar to the SharePoint app manifest, which we'll talk to in more detail in following modules, where, you know, it's really about declaring, you know, what access you need and what components you want to deploy. So again, if you learn the concept of a manifest once, you've learned it for both Office and for the SharePoint product. And then very similar to the provider-hosted app model in SharePoint, that manifest is essentially going to be telling you where it needs to look inside a web server, wherever it may be, where your app actually loads. So for instance, the LinkedIn app within Outlook Online isn't running on the Outlook Online server. That's running on LinkedIn server somewhere. So that it's essentially an iframe of that area within your app that's then loading and having that reaching out from inside that iframe to call the Office JS APIs. So that's a very important part to understand. And if you do want to get in the store, essentially what you're doing is going into the seller dashboard with that app manifest and uploading that. And then therefore the store actually keeps a copy of that manifest so that when your users, like we demonstrated earlier, deploy that into Outlook or one of the other Office clients, that manifest is actually stored locally. If you do it from file, you can just point to the manifest file, which is an XML file, and then obviously your client will pick that up. And we'll show you a bit more about kind of getting started and debugging and how that hooks in the manifests at real time as well in a moment. So before we get Scott to show some demos, I wanted to cover off some of the shapes that we have within Apps for Office. Again, very similar to Apps for SharePoint, there's three kind of main areas where we can target. We actually showed a few of these in the demonstrations earlier. The first one is the task pane. And this is really about providing an app adjacent to a document, whether it be in Word, whether it be in Excel. You know, it's really about kind of having something side by side. And there's an app I'll be showing later which highlights that task pane in a really, really good way. But you'll see here that there's some example screenshots here where there's this is a March Madness basketball chart that someone had built for us, where it allowed you on the right-hand side to go and grab documents from another location and inject screenshots directly into the Word document. So again, another common thing that we see people wanting to do in,
right. Yeah,
in pulling
things through. The task pane is great for connecting to other data sources, analyzing that data, and then injecting it into the document. So
right.
It's good metaphor for that.
Yeah, and there's one we'll be showing later on where it's the other way around, right? Where it's like looking in the document
and then pushing,
servicing it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then this one, which is very similar, the Bing News search is actually, you can see there's highlighted the Microsoft word there, and that's automatically done a news search based on that word and shown the best matches. Now, the nice part about the Bing News search app is that the plus and the star keys there means that I can actually click the plus there and it's going to inject that search term directly into my Word document and make that a reference in my Word document. So again, really useful from a building out kind of how you're building out your documents and showing where your sources are and stuff.
Right, and that's that pipeline you're talking about where you consume an external source of data and inject it into the document. And as you said, we'll turn it around and take stuff from the document and put it back in a data source.
Right. Yep. And then lastly, this one with a dictionary aspect with Merriam-Webster's here, where I'm highlighting, even if it was in Excel, I mean, sure, people aren't that typo hungry when it comes to building spreadsheets, but you know, you can highlight the word office and it's automatically gone to the Merriam-Webster's dictionary and highlighted the definition of that there as well. So again, you know, a lot of the learnings engineers did from the VSTO and the COM add-in world of what kind of shapes people were looking for in Office, this task pan shape was definitely the most most popular out of the ones that they've built into the app model already. And then secondly, the second app shape there is the content shape. Now, this one is very, very useful when you start looking at things like Excel and PowerPoint. This Excel app here is a Bing Map app. And what this allows you to do is maybe take your raw data here, so you can see it's got the states and it's got two data points on there. And essentially it's allowed me to click on a Bing map and actually map those data points live from Excel thing in a visual way. Very, very cool. Something you'd probably have had to have done in the past with a standalone web application and uploaded that Excel document somewhere and then pointed to that Excel document as a pointer. Whereas now I get that content app right directly inside the Excel where I need it to be. And then similarly, this one, which is available on the store as well, allows me to take, you know, the various people statistics, and actually our engineering team use this quite heavily when they're planning their next scrums of who's going to be on what, how many people are going to be in each scrum within the different features they're building out on the roadmap. Show really highlights, you know, in a visual way that, you know, there's 85,000, and so it does the graphical display of those numbers in an interesting way. In actual fact, if you go to the Office Dev GitHub organization area, Office aka.ms/whack-office-code-samples, this example is actually there for you to download as open source, and it's actually using TypeScript in the background that's fully client-side, which is a really good example of being able to leverage some of those web technologies that Office developers have been desperate to try and use among SharePoint developers, that they can now leverage a lot of this stuff that is being announced at the Build conference and at TechEds or even at third-party conferences where we can start to leverage web technologies directly within apps for Office and apps for SharePoint.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting because we get to use the same skill sets on the SharePoint and Office development side now.
Right.
So it's great. Learn once, use many times, many places.
And then lastly, this one here is a nice bubble graph that, again, pointing to raw data is allowing us to display that in a nice visual way. So lots of additional things where, you know, before this was near enough impossible to do with a COM add-in or VSTO, that is now very, very easy with this content pane within, injecting that within an Office client. And then lastly, again, because Outlook is where a lot of us live day in, day out, sometimes I wish I didn't live in there as much as I did.
Always connected.
But with, yeah, right. With Office, with Outlook specifically, we saw the LinkedIn tag there where, you know, it opens up that content pane based on the context of the to line and the from line and the CC line. But also can also interact with the body of the email as well. So this really gives us the ability to kind of add into that read area without me even having to be in this edit mode, which is, again, really, really useful. And you'll see over time we'll be adding more shapes as we get more feedback from ISVs and from you guys as well via our user voice channels, which I'll talk about at the end of the session, where we want to hear what kind of shapes you want within the Office UI client. So whether it's LinkedIn or FedEx or maybe like this example of a task pane on the right-hand side, and I'll again demonstrate this template, a similar one to this template one later on, where we really start to hook directly into the user interface in a supportive way using standard web technologies. So with that, with the shapes kind of shown, I figured it'd be a nice time for you, Scott, to just to show some of those examples in a little bit more detail.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and take a look at that. So here I am inside my Outlook client in the browser. And as you had pointed out, when you have apps available to you, they're going to show up here on this pane, on this bar at the top here. And The thing I want to, I really want to emphasize in this particular part is the idea of finding data in the body of the male and then using that in some way with the app. So in this case, what we've got here is the package tracker, which you showed briefly. It was a brief screenshot you showed there before, but I'm going to go ahead and demo it. What this package tracker is doing is it's looking for package information within the email, and then you can come up here and it'll surface because it thinks it's found something, and you can go ahead and click on it. And then what it'll do is it'll run off and track that for you. So you can see that based on that FedEx number here, it's just the same as if I'd run up to the FedEx site and input my number and all that stuff. But here, it's just letting me stay in one place and continue to do the work. And so those are the two key takeaways from this, just this simple thing we're doing, is that I can stay in one place and continue to work, and I can use data that's in the body of the mail to drive the app. That's really one of the most powerful things that you have going on. So in this case, again, we're taking some data, we're driving the app. Now, let me just show you another example here. So I'm gonna zip over to SharePoint real quick on this other tab, and I'm gonna show you something that we're working on here. What we've got is a concept of what we'll call a research project, okay? So here are a couple of lists in SharePoint that I'm using. One is just a list of research projects, and you can see I'm doing a little bit of research on Azure, on Office 365, and on Angular single-page applications. And the concept of the research project is that as I'm doing research on these particular topics, the inputs to that research could be links that I find on the web, or they could be documents that I have that I want to include as part of this research project. So here we have a list of references, and these references are just going to be, for example, a simple link. So you can see that I have a link here to the Azure portal, which is something I discovered while I was doing research. Now, if I'm in my Outlook client, though, then it might be that someone has sent me email that contains links that are something I care about for a research project. Maybe you even know I'm doing a research project and you send me something. So here we have a very simple example of receiving an email that has a hyperlink in it, this to Microsoft.com. And you can see that because this email has a hyperlink in it, the research tracker has appeared here saying, hey, I think I've identified something you might care about. And we're going to go ahead and start up the app by just clicking on the research tracker. And then what you can see it's doing is it's listing the research projects. Now, you'll notice that these are the research projects I just showed you in the list. So it's reading the list from SharePoint to produce this set of projects that are available to me. And you can see that when I selected one at the top here, it shows me that I have the Azure portal link in my Azure research project. Well, under the discovered links sections, if I drop this down, you can see that these are the links that were discovered in the body of the email. So maybe I look at this and say, yeah, you know that Microsoft.com link, that's also key to my Azure research. So I'm going to go ahead and take that discovered link and add it to the selected project. And I click on it for a second, and it's going to go ahead and add that link in. And sure enough, you can see now that I've got those two links inside the project. And in fact, if I come back now and we click on the references again just to refresh the view of this thing, we're going to see that, in fact, this was added to my SharePoint list. So this is a really powerful idea, right, Jeremy? Because what you were saying was, you were showing before how we could grab some data and bring it into our app. And here I'm showing how you can get some data out of the body of your mail and then send it back into SharePoint, into some data store. And your mind can really just wander with this idea about what kind of backends I can now interact with as I'm reading and writing, all the while staying within the context of the email that I'm looking at.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you took the FedEx one even further, we could almost have like a canceled order process or whatever directly within the app if we wanted to, right? Or, you know, like a button that chases the delivery driver to move faster and make sure he turns up tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I need my memory for my giant laptop for building full trust SharePoint solutions.
And if you're trying to really get your arms around why you should care about all this, I mean, I think that is a really concise example of why you care about it, because it allows you to stay in that one place and continue to work regardless of what backends, what technologies are involved. You can bring them all together in that one place. And as I said earlier when we were talking, I think if you offered the idea to business users that they could stay in Outlook and they would never have to leave all day, a lot of folks would sign up for that experience.
Right. And the good news for you guys out there is that this demo that we've built out is actually going to be on GitHub very shortly. And the really cool bit about this is the whole thing's been built with AngularJS, the JavaScript framework, with a web API broker backend. So it's going to be a great, full, compelling example, which we actually think you might use within your own organization as is. But we're hoping that as a community, you might come up with some new cool ideas for this research project app. You know, again, it's not just SharePoint. It's an app for Office inside Outlook, and it's going to be an app for Office within inside Word. And in future, we're hoping you come up with some cool ideas about how we can enhance this. So we're really in it together. We want to, as a community, grow out these samples. And as you guys come up with, well, how will we do this particular scenario, we'll go away and build additional things on top of these scenarios to prove out that technology. So again, this is a great example of how you can leverage this new platform and not just think about Office or think about SharePoint, but think about the overall platform and how you can release to the app model as one. So thanks very much for that demo. So it's the first time I've seen that research project one running, so that's good to see the progress on that.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a fun time to be a developer, right? Yeah. I like to learn some new things, so yeah. I've had a great time with it.
So getting started, what we're going to do now is focus on showing you how you can kind of ramp up. Now, again, much like the apps for SharePoint, apps for Office is really just as simple. We download Visual Studio 2013. Again, recommend you always check for the release to market version of an update. So in this instance, in July, it's update 2. And in this example, you know, when we're building very much like apps for SharePoint with apps for Office, we have a few options of how we develop. So the samples that you were running there, you've been building those things with Office 365, just with SharePoint Online and Office on the desktop, right?
That's right. And when we're also using some Azure components in the background as part of the app.
Yeah, and I guess the key thing here is that you don't necessarily just have to be using online. For that particular example where we could be running that with on-premises and we could be kind of building that against Outlook on the desktop client, and rather than the Azure web components running in the cloud, they could be deployed to an on-premises server somewhere as well. So again, right, that whole research project example could have been built purely for an on-premises environment with that aspect in mind. So again, you know, the app models aren't just about Office 365. Obviously, with the cadence and the iterations of our roadmap being online first, and there will be some things that come out that won't be available on the server products, but the app model is still something that you can use in an on-premises environment too. So with that in mind, what I wanted to demonstrate was just as a kind of a, from a base brand new Visual Studio project, how we can get started with the app model inside Office. So I'm just going to quickly come over to Visual Studio here. And again, I'm just running on Windows 8. Nothing additional on this machine. I do have Office on this machine, but you don't even necessarily need Office on your machine to do these demos, because you can tie up the debugger to Office Online. I'm going to give it a bit of a better demo name there. So I'm just going to call it MS Building MVA here. And like we saw in the shapes, I get to pick where I want this shape to be. So I'm going to pick a mail app because I want that shape to be at a target in this particular scenario. And when I click next, I only want this to show up in the compose. And the reason for that, while that's creating that, is a typical scenario I have. I've only been at Microsoft now for just under 3 months, and there are a lot of buildings on campus in Redmond. And I often find myself having to go to Bing and find out where this particular building is in relation to where our marketing team is in building one. Mm-hmm. So what I found useful is grabbing the building map and the address and injecting that in my meeting invites for other people, because I'm assuming that some of the people don't know where all the other buildings are.
Sure, that makes
sense. They move forward. So you can see here that this has built out my standard app, and very much like the SharePoint model that Scott showed in the last module of the course, we have two packages. We have the web, where all of the little guts of my application is, and then we have the actual Office app there. Now, in this instance, the Office app is really just the manifest file, because right now you can't do anything really but just have the manifest point to the web app. Now, the manifest file is when I double click on this, is going to be where, very similar to SharePoint, I'm going to be asking for the permissions, setting up my versionings, coming up with my provider name and the description of the app for both the internal app catalog or whether I want to push over to the store. And again, various different permissions that I need for these apps. So again, that was definitely a Zoom It little bug there. Or that was a mouse to hand to eye error.
That looks better.
Yeah. So you can see here that, you know, there's various different permissions that I can ask for when I deploy these apps, very similar to SharePoint.
Right. Same idea. Yeah.
So the concept there is still the same. Now, in this example, all I'm going to do is I'm going to add a few little code snippets. And this example is available on GitHub as well, which is called MS Buildings. If I go over to my JavaScript file, this is the default script you get. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to add a few functions down the bottom. I'm going to need a function here that will actually go and get me all of the buildings. So I have a service running in Azure. In the GitHub version of this, we actually provide you the source code for that service. So you could actually load all your own business data in, building data in there if you
wanted
to.
Yeah, so I think that's a key point, what you just said there, right? So this whole model allows you to create and consume your own custom API sources. So in this case, what you've done is you've built out your own custom API source, and now you're consuming it in the standard way. We can see a get.json function down there, which I might use to consume anything off the internet, flight data, movie data, music data. So again and again and again, you see those same skills over and over again. You're able to leverage them in lots of different ways.
Yeah, and again, this is very similar JavaScript code that you'll see on the web as well. So we're not tied to a particular model here. You know, this could be a PHP or a Ruby, whatever web platform you like.
You can talk HTTP.
Right. So we've created that function there. So what I need to do is in the bootstrap of me loading this app, I just need to add one extra snippet here, which is to actually call the load buildings function. Now, another function we need to add, and you'll see this, is once we've got the list of buildings shown in my task pane within Outlook, what I want to be able to do is actually inject that building details directly into my page. Now, this for me is where it gets really, really compelling. Because if you look here, all we're really doing is we're taking the whatever the button click was, and this will make more sense when I do the demo, and I'm building out some HTML. So you can see I'm building out a div with an H4. Mm-hmm. I'm grabbing the details URL for the building, which will be the Bing URL to the building number I've got. All of this stuff has come from that service that I've called in the array. And then essentially, I'm just kind of writing out the image URL to the map itself, and obviously the directions are being pumped out again from that service. And then to inject that HTML into my page, all I'm doing is I'm grabbing the mailbox item itself, and then I'm just adding some information to that body, and then changing the location. So again, a few lines of code, and I've directly interacted with the mail that the end user has open.
And if I have this sample, I could use this pattern to inject anything I wanted to the mail.
Right, yeah. So this is a really good base sample, and I'll show you where to get this in a moment. Now, what I'll have to do now is just click F5, and that's going to basically jump me into this debugging experience. Now, because I'm deploying to Outlook, it does need to talk to Exchange. So when you're working with Exchange apps for Office, you are going to need an account where you have the access to deploy that app here. In the first demo we did at the beginning of the session, obviously the admin deployed the app from the store and approved it. Mm-hmm. This is Visual Studio's way of almost sideloading that. So I'm just going to quickly put in my credentials here. And once you've done this once, you're good to go. I tend not to because I do lots of demos on different tenants, but if you click remember my account there, that will just do that for this project for the life of it. And what that's going to do is upload that manifest file into Exchange for this user only. So again, this would work if you were sharing a tenant with someone else. What's really nice about this is that I've actually, you know, launched this in Chrome. So if you're, I tend to use Internet Explorer just because out of habit, everything seemed to work previously in SharePoint and Office development with Internet Explorer. But I mean, have you done much work with other browsers as well? Is there any benefits that you've seen of doing that, Scott?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I'm glad we pointed this out because I don't think we've said it before, though, that just a lot of the things that we're doing by its very nature, by the very fact that we're using standard internet technologies, is going to work across different browsers. So, different organizations may have a different primary browser. Different key people in organizations have different browsers
right.
that they care about, right? So, I mean, if you're on an iPad, then you're going to have a different browser maybe than if you're sitting at your desktop. So that is an important thing. But again, I would say that that's really all a standard part of internet development. So once again, it's learning the same skills that you would for anything that you're doing in the internet and then applying them to SharePoint.
Yeah, and one nice part about this is that when you select the app for Office projects here, if I go over to the properties window, what that in actual fact doing is allowing me to pick what browser I want to show to test this. And also I could test it in my Office desktop client as well.
Sure.
So right from my Visual Studio environment here, I've got the ability to kind of flick around and see that working. Now, I think by doing that, I've actually stopped my debug, but let's just see. If I click OK and click apps, you'll see here that my MS Building MVA showed up inside my OWA. And what that's doing now is it's going to go and call that service where it's returning a list of those buildings, and it's going to return that now in here. No, and I did think it had stopped. So I noticed that my debug had actually stopped, so I'm just going to click start again on that. So if you do get that error, you can just click start and it will redeploy that and have all my services back up and running. And the reason I noticed it was out of debug was because my IntelliTrace wasn't showing.
Right.
So now if I come back in here, the nice thing about this is if I reload my Windows, my Chrome app there with Outlook and just go over and wait for the app to show up and then click on MS Building MVA.
There you go.
You'll see that that's listed all the buildings directly from that service. So again, it's grabbed that JSON and rendered it inside the HTML. And then if I kind of select somewhere in my body, I might go meet on Friday for beers or something, and then inject building one where we're based, and I click insert, and it's immediately injected the image, the address, and then once it's in here, I can start playing with the size of it. And again, once that's sent, that's going to have all those hyperlinks in there. So
that's great. Can you add me to that meeting?
Yeah, right. Yeah, beer sounds good, right?
That's right.
So you can see this is very, very flexible. And again, if you wanted to see this in action here, when I jump into GitHub, there is one called Microsoft Buildings Code Sample. And in here, if I just open up that folder, you'll see that not only am I taking the MS Buildings app for Office project, as well as the buildings web, which is where I added the JavaScript code, I've also got that court building service that you could take and bootstrap over to your database where
right,
you're building
right,
the data.
Web API service, that's
yep.
great.
So again, we're providing as many of these samples as we can so that you have full choice of extensibility there in your own solutions.
Looks great.
So hopefully that was another good example of how you can build in a very common scenario into meeting invites or even just standard emails by having that task pane and inject those buildings in. So big thanks to Rolando Jimenez Salgado from the engineering team who built that app for the SharePoint conference. And sometimes wish he had a less complicated name to pronounce. but he built that for the SharePoint conference and was good enough to open source that for us. So again, if you've got some cool ideas of what we could do to add to that scenario, more than happy for you to pull down that code and submit your pull request with those enhancements as well. So to wrap up this module now, just to kind of conclude on the fact that, you know, hopefully you've realized the power of the Office 365 developer platform and the ability to build your business solutions into our product user interface and to leverage the building blocks, much like Scott showed inside the SharePoint building blocks as the list items there to store your research projects, but also to external building blocks like a custom service where you're getting building data via a JSON service, is a very, very compelling thing. And as Scott showed, you know, with his example with AngularJS, you know, you can pick whatever web platform development environment you'd like to start building on top of this Office 365 platform. So hopefully it gets you excited to go out there and start building these samples. If you need some inspiration, obviously you can go to the GitHub area there. And one ask for us is really that you guys start at dev.office.com. So one wonderful animation there of pulling out the dev.office.com there. This is really where we want to start. We're going to have a nice code sample directory there where you'll be able to say, show me all the samples that are apps for Office in Outlook that use the managed metadata service in Office 365, or show me all the samples that are apps for Office that are using AngularJS or that are using Ruby. So you'll be able to kind of dig through those code samples in a much more discoverable way in the future. And that's a lot of feedback we've had on the user voice community. which as a wrap up there, as a good segue, is if you go to the bottom one, the give feedback, the aka.ms WAC Office Dev Feedback is where we're really wanting to hear from you, whether it's about content that you think is missing from our training or from the references or maybe from our code samples. We're really interested in hearing from you in that perspective. And then in addition to that, in another module in this course, we'll be working very closely with you guys as developers to take your VSTO code and your COM add-ins and the VBA code and your SharePoint Full Trust code and Sandbox solution code and transform that into the app model. And we're going to be doing that via the aka.ms WAC Office Dev PMP Practices site. So please go and check that out. Definitely listen to the module with Steve Walker and Richard DeZariga, where they'll be talking about that in more detail. And lastly, if you have problems or you've got some questions around API or samples, please feel free to reach out to us on Stack Overflow, aka.ms WAC Ask SharePoint or Ask Office. That's really where we're going to be engaging with you guys from a marketing perspective, from a MVP community's perspective, and our engineering, our support teams also watching there as well and have been responding. So please reach out on those. And then one last link there is if you haven't heard of our Office 365 technical network, which is available on Yammer, yammer.com WAC IT Pro Network, we're actually engaging in conversations there. We have polls there where you guys can get engaged on voting on upcoming training or upcoming samples you'd like to see, but also in blog posts and additional things like that. So we're engaging with you as much as we can, and we'd love to hear from you. It's definitely not a lonely place every day for me to go and check what kind of questions come in. So please, please come and check us out there. And that's where I post my podcast show. We're really interested in what other kinds of shows you'd like to hear and who you'd like me to go and interview out there in the field that are building on top of this app model. So thanks again for your time, and I hope you found this module useful, and a big thanks to you, Scott, for coming up here and sharing the stage with me to show off this platform.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And please enjoy the rest of the course, and there'll be a variety of courses coming on Microsoft Virtual Academy around Office 365 development. So please keep your eyes peeled to dev.office.com and blogs.office.com, where we'll be announcing all our news on that.